Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one and only Sean Sports Thought Podcast. We have a lot to talk about. As always, you know, we talk about the biggest news in sports, and I'm not going to waste anyone's time. I'm just going to get right into it, starting with the NFL. Aaron Rodgers' optimism about a return to the field this season appears to be waning. During his weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee Show, Rodgers said it's, quote, unrealistic to think he would be 100% if he did play for the New York Jets again in 2023, saying, quote, I do feel like in the next 3 to 4 weeks, it would be very possible to get to 100%. If I was 100% today, I'd definitely be pushing to play. He also said the whole time it's been hoping that we're still in it because it's unrealistic to think I'd be 100% at any point in the season. Ian Rappaport tweeted, quote, Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers says on at Pat McAfee show that if he were 100%, he'd be pushing to come back, but he's not there. Being medically cleared as 100% healed is not realistic at 14 weeks. Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic noted that Rodgers didn't directly say he wouldn't play again this season, but, quote, the tone he had during the interview suggested that is the case. Wednesday is the deadline for the Jets to activate him to the main roster after opening his practice window on November 29th. This should come as no surprise as the Jets were officially eliminated from playoff contention with a 30-0 loss to the Miami Dolphins in Week 15. If you don't know, Rodgers suffered the injury in New York's Week 1 win over the Buffalo Bills on only the fourth offensive play from scrimmage of the season. A torn Achilles is typically a season-ending injury, but Rodgers set out to do the unthinkable and made it clear shortly after suffering the injury that he intended to play and do everything in his power to play again in 2023. Per NFL Network, Rodgers consulted with well-known surgeon Dr. Neil Elotrosh and underwent a, quote, speed bridge procedure, which was meant to significantly cut down on his recovery time. In the weeks that followed, Rodgers began appearing on the Jets sideline for home games, and he even got on the field and threw the ball around before games as well. As Rodgers was attempting to work his way back, the Jets were struggling to remain relevant and in the playoff race largely due to poor play at the quarterback position. Zach Wilson, who was the number 2 overall pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, replaced Rodgers when he got injured in Week 1 and went on to start the next 9 games, posting a 3-6 record. After a poor performance and a 32-6 loss to the Buffalo Bills in Week 11, Wilson was benched in favor of journeyman Tim Boyle, who started in Week 12 against the Miami Dolphins. He also started the following week in a 13-8 loss to the Atlanta Falcons. Wilson returned to the starting lineup in Week 14 and turned in one of the best performances of his career, finishing 27 of 36 for 301 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions in a 30-6 win over the Houston Texans. Prior to Week 13, the Jets opened the 21-day practice window for Rodgers, meaning the team would have 3 weeks to decide whether to activate him or shut him down for the rest of the season. Quote, this isn't so much getting ready to play as much as it is a progression in his rehab, head coach Robert Saleh said at the time. I can't get into all the detail in regards to IR designations and where we stand and why we are able to do this, but for Aaron, what he will be doing in practice is no different than what he would be doing in Field 3, as you all watch it. In regards to certain drills, individuals being able to throw it instead of staff members, it's teammates, so there's no added risk to it. There's certain things that he's been cleared that we are going to allow him to do. Rodgers made it clear during a November 30th appearance on the Pat McAfee show that it, quote, wouldn't make sense for him to play if the team was out of postseason contention, rightfully so. At 5-9, their postseason hopes are pretty much over. With that, we are going to switch gears to some baseball. Pretty crazy. This guy is a team legend, no doubt. He's having some technical difficulties. Bear with me. Okay, let me check the time. We are at 4 minutes. So let's talk about some baseball, shall we? Andrew McCutchen's Pittsburgh reunion will reportedly last for more than one season. The designated hitter slash outfielder agreed to a new one-year, $5 million deal with the Pittsburgh Pirates on Tuesday, per the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. While McCutchen's decision to return to the Pirates on a one-year deal was one of the MLB's feel-good stories last offseason, his name popped up in trade rumors in June. MLB Network reported the team was, quote, likely to be deadline sellers and could look to move the veteran and perhaps bring him back again next offseason. Such an approach would have been risky, though, since the veteran could have fallen in love with a new place and chosen to stay in free agency. McCutchen also told Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that he wanted to remain on the Pirates. He ultimately was not traded and will now remain with the National League Central team. Perhaps other teams would have given him a better opportunity to pursue the first World Series title of a career. That includes an NL MVP, 5 All-Star selections, 4 Silver Slugger awards, and a Gold Glove, but he is definitely a Pirates legend. Although he is definitely past his peak at 37 years old, he was solid in 2023 with a .256 batting average, .378 on base percentage, .397 slugging with 12 home runs, 43 RBIs, and 11 stolen bases in 112 games for the Pirates. However, his season was cut short because of an Achilles injury. It seemed like Pittsburgh was a contender with a hot start early in the season, but the team faded and the fan favorite was not able to bring home the fairy tale ending that he was surely looking for when he decided to return. Even though McCutchen is no longer one of the best players in the league like he was during his first stint with the Pirates from 2009 through 2017, the power has still been there of late as he launched 27 homers in 2021 for the Philadelphia Phillies and 17 long balls in 2022 for the Milwaukee Brewers. If he can provide some of that power in 2024, then I think the Pittsburgh Pirates will be a very interesting team. Let's switch gears to some NBA, but this is pretty gruesome stuff. Ex-NBA G League center Chance Comanche admitted to having a role in the death of Mariana Rogers, according to Fox 5 in Las Vegas. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department announced on Sunday it had taken Comanche and Sakari Harnden into custody for the alleged kidnapping and murder of Rogers. More details were provided that were revealed in police documents. Quote, according to Harden's arrest report, the two suspects began planning the murder of Rogers at the end of November and eventually acted on their reported plot when Comanche's team played in Las Vegas. Authorities said Comanche and Harnden initially intended to have a third party ultimately murder Rogers. Quote, he admitted that they were unable to get anyone to help with the murder, so they crafted their own plan, which included Comanche posing as a trick to schedule a meeting with the victim under the direction of Harnden. It was reported, as part of the scheme, Comanche told Rogers that he was into kinky sex and wanted to tie both women up in the car. Jesus Christ. Comanche reportedly confessed to placing an HDMI cord around Rogers' neck and strangling Mariana for approximately 10 seconds with the cord. Jesus. While he stopped when the woman was having a hard time breathing, Harnden proceeded to strangle her again. I wonder what that poor woman did to them. Comanche told police he and Harnden left Rogers' body in Henderson, Nevada, and intentionally attempted to remove any traces of their presence on her location. Comanche and Harnden were initially charged with kidnapping, and authorities added a murder charge after Rogers' remains were found. Jesus Christ, way to fuck your life up, you idiot. He had appeared in 13 games for the G League's Stockton Kings this season. The Kings released the 27-year-old after he was arrested. No surprise there. Fun fact, this piece of shit actually went to Beverly Hills High School, so not much of a surprise there. And with that, let's switch gears to more basketball. Hopefully, Ja Morant will never find himself in a situation like Chance Comanche did. Memphis Grizzlies point guard Ja Morant's buzzer-beating game winner concluded a 34-point night and capped off a 115-113 road victory over the New Orleans Pelicans on Tuesday evening. Ja Morant, who is making his regular season debut after serving a 25-game suspension for conduct detrimental to the league, also added 8 assists and 6 rebounds. He made 12 of 24 field goals in his 35 minutes of action, so very, very solid return. The Pelicans led by as many as 24 points and carried a 10-point lead into the fourth quarter, but Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. scored 14 apiece in the final frame to lead the Grizz all the way back. Brandon Ingram paced the Pelicans with 34 points. Jonas Valanciunas added a 22-point, 14-rebound double-double, and Zion Williamson scored 13 points as well. Having Ja Morant is certainly a welcome sight for the Grizzlies, who went only 6-19 in his absence. Morant didn't show any rust upon his return, and his patented explosiveness was on full display in this one. Memphis has plenty of ground to make up in the race for the playoffs, but nearly three quarters of the season still remain, so they just need to focus on that. With Ja Morant back in the mix, a return trip to the postseason after finishing as a number 2 seed in each of the past 2 years is certainly possible. For now, though, the Grizzlies are looking to stack wins. Up next is Ja Morant's 2023-2024 home debut, which will occur on Thursday, against Tyrese Haliburton and the Indiana Pacers. Let's talk about some more NBA. I want to rank my top 50 NBA players right now. Joel Embiid may have accomplished the ultimate individual goal by winning NBA MVP during the 2022-23 season, but don't think he's done racking up accolades quite yet. Although I do think Jokic should have won the MVP for the third year in a row last year, but there is a concept known as voter's fatigue. But if anything, the Sixers star center may be playing the best basketball of his career as he leads Philly up the Eastern Conference pecking order. But that does not mean he checks in at number one. just, you know. So here's the methodology. As explained in full on Sports Math Network, which also shows how successful this metric has been predicting MVP races over the last decade, RPR MVP looks at a player's individual impact, boiling it down to a single number, assuming players have played 10 plus games. Everything hinges on rolling player rating, RPR, which shows how players have fared over the previous 10 games, using a schedule-adjusted version of the game score metric to provide a reasonable snapshot of on-court contributions. From there, five components are calculated to approximate a player's true peak, elongated peak, total value added, average performance, and team success. A player's RPR MVP score is calculated by summing the z-scores in each of the five categories, thus accounting for position relative to the pack in each component. Like I said before, the numbers will have the final say. It is worth noting that defense is a bit undervalued by this metric, which both hurts the association's Defensive Player of the Year favorites and aids some of the league's leading traffic cones. It's also difficult to account for plays that don't lead to box score contributions, and some players benefit from meaningless stats accrued in garbage time situations, though the latter tends to be less relevant as the sample size grows. In other words, RPR MVP is not perfect, no all-in-one metric ever will be, but based on its historical accuracy in predicting the MVP race, it provides a great player ranking baseline in my opinion. And with that said, at number 50, we got Brook Lopez of the Milwaukee Bucks. Brook Lopez has excelled all over the court, knocking down 35.1% of his 5.2 deep attempts a game on one end and swatting away three shots a game on the other. He and Victor Wembanyama are the only qualified players with at least three blocks and no fewer than one made triple a game this season. And that's a club populated by only 2020-21 Miles Turner and 2022-23 Jaren Jackson Jr. throughout all of NBA history. Honorable mentions include Desmond Bane of the Grizzlies, Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets, Darius Garland of the Cavs, Drew Holiday of the Celtics, Reggie Jackson of the Nuggets, Lauri Markkanen of the Jazz, Evan Mobley of the Cavaliers, Austin Reeves of the Los Angeles Lakers, Kobe White of the Chicago Bulls, and Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number 49, we got D'Anthony Melton from the Philadelphia 76ers. Speaking of players whose per-game scoring averages mask their true value to a legitimate contender, D'Anthony Melton is averaging a career-high 12 points to go with his 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.6 steals, and half a block a game, but he's shooting only 39.4% from the field. However, his consistent ability to space the floor and defend every set under the sun as a 6'2 guard who plays far bigger than his frame has had a serious impact on the success of the Philadelphia 76ers. Next up, D'Angelo Russell from the Los Angeles Lakers. Since D'Angelo Russell made a surprising push toward the top 40 in the last edition, he's missed a game due to illness and struggled to find a shooting form. Over an admittedly small sample size of just four games, he's averaged 10.5 points, 5.5 assists, and 2.8 rebounds while shooting 42.9% from the floor, 31.6% from three, and a shocking 0.0% at the stripe, admittedly only on one attempt. If D'Angelo is to continue remaining a truly valuable contributor to the Lakers rather than ceding more touches to the players waiting in the wings, he'll have to regain both some degree of aggression and driving to the basket and a perimeter stroke more in line with his season-long 39.3% clip. DeMar DeRozan of the Chicago Bulls. DeMar DeRozan is still capable of true takeover performances. Look no further than December 11th against the Milwaukee Bucks, in which the Bulls remained competitive enough to force overtime on the back of his 41 points and 11 assists, which came on 30 field goal attempts with only two turnovers. The issue is that DeRozan followed up that night, that outing, with a 3 of 13 breakfast and a loss to the Denver Nuggets. Night-to-night consistency has not been there during his age 34 season, especially from two-point territory. Negative on-off splits have been a staple of DeRozan's career, though they've often been misleading. This year has taken that to the extreme, since the Bulls have been 9.4 points per 100 possessions worse when he's putting his mid-range talent on display. Next up, the aforementioned Jonas Valanciunas of the New Orleans Pelicans. Jonas Valanciunas keeps trucking along for the New Orleans Pelicans, playing a non-glamorous game that consistently yields positive results. The big man has suited up 27 times for a team that has played 27 games, and while his per-game averages of 14.6 points, 9.7 rebounds, and 2.5 assists are not exactly, you know, hugely notable, his all-around efficiency and sturdy interior defense have helped the Pelicans outscore their opponents by 7.1 more points per 100 possessions when he is on the floor. Next up, Paolo Banchero, Orlando Magic. Paolo Banchero has not yet developed the consistency necessary to rise too much higher as a second-year standout, and part of that stems from the Orlando Magic's spread-the-ball-around philosophy and wealth of up-and-coming talent. That said, the reigning rookie of the year still puts together the occasional performance that leaves no doubt that he will make multiple all-star rosters. Dropping 42 points in a December 6 loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers was one such example. Going for 36 points and 10 boards against this very always tough Boston Celtics defense was another. Next up, just DeJounte Murray of the Atlanta Hawks. DeJounte Murray has held steady for the Atlanta Hawks, who have struggled to remain in the thick of the Eastern Conference playoff race as they face a rather difficult schedule. Only 9 teams have faced a tougher slate, but Atlanta now goes against a middle-of-the-pack remaining calendar. That bodes well for the do-everything guard, who has proved impervious to upticks in opponent difficulty. He has scored at least 20 points in 15 of his 26 appearances, and he's dropped at least 5 dimes in 6 of the remaining 11 contests. Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam's numbers are down across the board. Specifically, he struggled to shoot the ball from the perimeter with any accuracy, connecting on only 26.3% of his 3.7 triples a game and 28.6% of his two-pointers from at least 16 feet. It speaks to the versatility of his game that he's still able to check in as a top 50 player for the Raptors despite shooting that badly. Siakam has also functioned as a multi-positional defender who can fill virtually any offensive role. And the Raptors' level of play has been drastically different with him on 1.2 net rating and off the court, negative 8.8 rating. Another Orlando Magic, Franz Wagner. Franz Wagner likely isn't done rising up the rankings. The 6'10 forward showed off his dangerous shooting stroke at Michigan, and he was backed by 2 straight collegiate seasons north of 80% at the stripe. Then he shot 35.4% and 36.1% from outside the arc during his first 2 professional seasons. So while he's averaging career highs in points at 20, rebounds 5.8, assists 3.9, and steals 1.1, he has that much more room for growth when his 4.9 deep tries per game start falling at a better clip than his current percentage of 29.3. 41, Michael Porter Jr. Imagine what might happen when Michael Porter Jr. shoots to the full extent of his capabilities. He's risen in the rankings despite slashing only 39.7, 36.4, 77.8 since the last edition of these rankings. But that's largely because he's helped the Denver Nuggets continue to play championship caliber basketball while chipping in with 7.2 rebounds a game and flat out refusing to make mistakes in the form of turnovers at only 1 turnover a game or 1.3 fouls a game. Though Porter, has the benefits of sharing the floor with a certain 2-time MVP for the vast majority of his minutes, it's no fluke that he's helped the Nuggets outscore the opposition by a substantial margin during his run. Number 40, Fred VanVleet of the Houston Rockets. The importance of Fred VanVleet's role can't be overstated, especially because the Houston Rockets are attempting to stay in above 500 world and compete for a Western Conference playoff spot despite boasting one of the association's 10 youngest rosters. Not only does the 29-year-old lead the league in minutes per game at 38.3, but he's also tasked with serving as a true dual threat option who can light up the scoreboard with his perimeter shooting and still get all of his teammates going. Next up, Rudy Gobert of the Minnesota Timberwolves. How are we doing on time? 18 minutes. Beautiful. Rudy Gobert's defensive prowess still is not fully captured by the ranking methodology in play here, which makes it all the more impressive that he's holding on a top 40 spot and on the cusp of true metric-based all-star consideration. Dunks and threes classifies Gobert as a 98th percentile defender, trailing only Xavier Tillman, Evan Mobley, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Joel Embiid, Goga Bitadze, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, and Jalen Suggs on the less glamorous end. Subjectively, he's even more impressive considering the electricity of his role to the Minnesota Timberwolves schemes. Gobert checks in as the number 3 finisher for the squad, currently pacing the Western Conference with room to spare, and it's reasonable to argue that he should be at least sharing the same territory as the two teammates that are outpacing him in these rankings. Bam Adebayo, next up, of the Miami Heat. Bam Adebayo has been working to rehabilitate a hip contusion that kept him out of the lineup after he logged 12.5 minutes of action against the Indiana Pacers on November 30th until he returned on December 18th with 22 points, 6 boards, and 6 assists in a tough loss to the aforementioned Minnesota Timberwolves. His decline from the top 20 is due solely to those absences. He ranks number 24 in true peak, number 22 in 10-game peak, and number 17 in average game, but the Heat's relative lack of success and his injury-related volume limitations, number 99 in that category, are dropping him further down the rankings than otherwise expected. Derek White of the Boston Celtics. Who would have expected Derek White to first make the honorable mentions of the list in December, and now he's ascended into the top 40. The Boston Celtics guard has been remarkably efficient within his role in Beantown, drilling 41.9% of his deep looks, turning the ball over only 1.8 times a game, and generally doing all the little things that help his teammates thrive. And as the season has progressed, he's gaining trust from head coach Joe Mazzulla to do the bigger things as well. Since the start of December, White has averaged a pristine 18.5 points, 5 assists, and 4.5 rebounds He just doesn't make mistakes. Number 36, Tobias Harris of the Philadelphia 76ers. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Tobias Harris rises higher than most will expect because of his consistent availability and reliable production for one of the NBA's true juggernauts. The Philadelphia 76ers rank second in SRS because they faced an easy schedule, but have capitalized by outscoring their opponents by a league-best 11.27 points a game. That works in Harris's favor since he's missed zero games and has done his job even as the three ball hasn't fallen, chipping it in reliably in every area to ensure he can elevate the impact of his more talented teammates in whatever way is necessary. Harris would rank 63rd if no team component factored into the rankings, but he does, and he's taking advantage. Kyrie Irving of the Dallas Mavericks. Kyrie Irving blended in nicely to a competitive Dallas Mavericks squad, keeping pace with the top outfits in the Western Conference. He's found the right way to balance his ball commanding style of offensive dominance with the proper deferrals to Luka Doncic, allowing him to blend together volume and efficiency rather nicely on the scoring end. But health concerns have held him back and prevented him from rising forward to the top 20 of the player rankings. He played only 13 minutes against the Blazers on December 8th and was subsequently diagnosed with a right heel contusion that has kept him out of the lineup since. With only 17 games under his belt, he doesn't have the volume necessary to climb the ladder to even greater heights just yet. Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics. Quote, I feel like I'm playing some of the best defense of my career, Jaylen Brown said on December 14th. I made a commitment before the season that I wanted to be first team all defense. I feel like I've been living up to that. Dunks and threes gives him plenty of credit, with the defensive estimated plus minus metric slotting him into the 95th percentile. Boston has also been slightly more effective with him on the floor, holding opponents to one fewer point per 100 possessions. Perhaps most importantly, though, his active hands and intensity have helped him pass the defensive eye test on a nightly basis. But yeah, next up, Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler might need some more help in Miami, which could come just by virtue of the roster getting healthier around him. The Heat are outscoring opponents by 6.2 points per 100 possessions with him on the floor, but getting trounced to the tune of negative 7.7 net rating when he's watching from the pine or in street clothes. Butler has undoubtedly regressed from the ridiculous level he reached down the stretch of the 2022-23 season. He's posting the first negative defensive box plus minus of his career and has seen subtle signs of erosion on offense, ranging from his poor shooting on two-pointers to his worsening assist-to-turnover ratio. However, team success is the biggest wart on his resume, which might be surprising given Miami's 15-12 record. Butler ranks between numbers 27 and 34 in each of the individual components of RPR MVP. Miami's SRS, though, ranks 21st due to a meager margin of victory against, to date, the league's second easiest schedule. Kristaps Porzingis, Boston Celtics. Kudos to Kristaps Porzingis for understanding how to play within Joe Mazzulla's scheme. Quote, his game in the win over Cleveland is a perfect example of how Boston's offense should work on any given night. Sure, he wasn't efficient, but he didn't allow that to get in the way of the team. Instead, he worked to earn extra easy looks and set himself up to succeed, Sam LaFrance wrote for the Celtics blog. The Celtics are simply too talented to let a rough night from any of their stars hold them down. There are just too many options within Joe Mazzulla's rotation for any one player to have to force up shots with hopes of finding a rhythm. Porzingis, whether he's on a heater or coming back from an injury-related absence, has refused to let misses deter him from taking the shots he should hoist. Similarly, he hasn't let his game devolve into hero-long attempts. Number 31, James Harden of the LA Clippers. One of the biggest risers since the December 6th edition of these rankings, James Harden sure seems to have found his footing with the LA Clippers. Dating back to the beginning of December, the bearded guard has averaged 20.1 points, 9.8 assists, 5 rebounds, 1.4 blocks, and 1.3 steals a game, while turning the ball over only 2.3 times a game. Number 30, Scottie Barnes of the Toronto Raptors. The list of players throughout NBA history to average at least 20 points while recording no fewer than a steal and a block per game is a short one. It features only 66 players, and only 5 are hitting the threshold in 2023-24. But Scottie Barnes isn't just a new member of that exclusive fraternity. He's also nailing 38.8% of his triples, chipping in with 9.2 boards and 5.8 assists per game, keeping his turnovers in check and playing in lockdown defense for the Toronto Raptors in ways that don't show up in the box score. 29, Mikal Bridges of the Brooklyn Nets. Mikal Bridges is so close to putting it all together. Some nights everything clicks. Take his 42 points in a December 2nd blowout win over the Orlando Magic, which were followed by 32 points, 6 dimes, and a game winner and a road victory over the Atlanta Hawks the next time he took the floor. But Bridges also goes through stretches where he plays a bit too passively on the scoring end, deferring to teammates rather than taking it upon himself to create easier looks in the half-court set. Quote, I just did everything bad, missing shots, free throws, not defending, not rebounding, just a bad one, Bridges said, per the New York Post's Brian Lewis, after a December 18th loss to the Utah Jazz, in which he went 4 of 16 from the field. Quote, pretty much just out there and letting my teammate down, coaches down, playing 5 on 4 out there basically while I'm out there. So I just got to be better and I won't let that happen again. 28, Lakers legend Brandon Ingram of the New Orleans Pelicans. Brandon Ingram hasn't made an all-star roster since his first season with the Pelicans, which came back in 2019-20. But this could be the year he breaks the streak as an all-around stalwart for a team quickly asserting itself as a significant factor in the Western Conference playoff race. The Duke product hasn't found his deep stroke. He's at 32.4% on 4.3 attempts a game, but everything else is clicking. He seemed more in control of his possessions, rising and firing for smooth jumpers at the right time and staying involved as a secondary distributor. 27. How about the rookie Chet Holmgren of the Oklahoma City Thunder? Chet Holmgren keeps thriving for the Oklahoma City Thunder, especially on the defensive end. The redshirt rookie has been an absolute menace, teleporting out of nowhere to wreak helpside havoc when he's not taking a more straightforward approach to deter easy buckets. He's prevented countless shots, tipped passes going through the middle of the paint, and swatted shots with ferocity for a team that has defensive potency littered throughout the roster. Holmgren, who now leads the non-Jalen Suggs pack in defensive estimated plus-minus per dunks and threes, even put together a two-game stretch with 7 and 8 blocks in victories over the Denver Nuggets and Memphis Grizzlies on December 16th and 18th. That's the only set of consecutive contests with 7-plus blocks of this season, as well as the lone such stretch by a rookie since Tim Duncan in 1998. Paul George of the LA Clippers. Paul George does not need to score the basketball to be effective for the LA Clippers. The 33-year-old forward is a capable secondary, sometimes even primary distributor. He can crash the boards on a nightly basis. He locks down on defense day in and day out to the point that he's in the 81st percentile for dunks and threes, defensive estimated plus minus. Plus, he can actually score the rock too. George is chipping in with 22.9 points a game, thriving in both as a rim crashing driver who generates 4 free throw attempts a game and connects at a 93.1% clip, and the perimeter threat who takes a whopping 8.2 triples per game and makes 39.2% of their shots from beyond the rainbow. Next up, Alperen Sengun of the Houston Rockets. Sometimes a missed shot says it all. With the game tied at 122 apiece and 7 seconds left on the clock in the fourth quarter of a December 18th game between the Cleveland Cavaliers and Houston Rockets, head coach Ime Udoka drew up a play for Alperen Sengun. The 21-year-old received the inbounds pass as his teammates cleared out, allowing him to operate one-on-one against Jared Allen. Sengun missed the fadeaway jumper and his team lost in overtime, but the confidence shown in him left little doubt that he's become the unquestioned centerpiece of the Houston offense, even while surrounded by talented veterans such as Fred VanVleet and up-and-coming talents such as Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr. 24, Devin Booker. Devin Booker is still working to overcome the absence that kept him out of action for 8 of the Phoenix Suns' first 10 games. Not in terms of his performance, of course. The volume isn't there. With only 17 games under his belt, Booker ranks 78th in the volume component of RPR MVP, and his absences have prevented the Suns from looking as a successful team. Next up, Julius Randle from the New York Knicks. He's been going off cumulatively since December, the beginning of December. He's averaging 26.3 points, 8.5 rebounds, and over 4 assists a game on 57% shooting from the field against a gauntlet of opponents. Number 22, Zion Williamson of the New Orleans Pelicans. Even as storylines have swirled about Zion Williamson's weight and eating habits, the New Orleans Pelicans star has thrived on the court. Keeping Zion away from the basket is practically impossible given his combination of power and dexterity, especially now that he's proved more adept at picking the right spots and hitting teammates with an on-target kick out of feeds. Dropping his turnovers per game to 2.5 while remaining heavily involved as a distributor has been vital to the Pelicans' success, particularly when the opposition can't... Okay. Yeah, so Zion Williamson. Next up, Donovan Mitchell from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Quote, my job is to focus on this, Donovan Mitchell explained while responding to questions about his future. We have 2 guys that are out, so I'm not answering anything. And no disrespect, I appreciate that you have to ask the question, but I'm not going there with any of those questions. My focus is on these guys being out, us trying to find a way to get wins. Donovan Mitchell will be a free agent in 2025, but exits can take place quicker than expected in the modern version of the NBA, and if he keeps playing like this for a Cleveland Cavaliers squad struggling to reach the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference standings, speculation could begin to run rampant in the near future. After all, the two guard has done quite a bit of heavy lifting within Darius Garland in the lineup and has now scored at least 20 points in 10 straight games. He's also averaged 5.8 assists during that stretch, remaining highly involved in the offense. Number 20, Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards' hip injury has clearly prevented him from maintaining his early season pace. He missed a pair contest as the calendar flipped from November to December, sat out again on December 11th, played only 3 minutes and 43 seconds against the Grizzlies 3 days earlier, and put together 4 of 17 and 3 of 19 shooting performances to bookend his latest bout with the hip pointer. Then he exploded, scoring 69 combined points in back-to-back wins over the Indiana Pacers and Miami Heat. Edwards' season has been a rollercoaster affair, but he's still averaging 24.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, and 5.1 assists. And a number of Minnesota Timberwolves. This one is Karl-Anthony Towns. The 7-footer is averaging 22.2 points, putting him north of the 20-point threshold for the 8th straight season. This year, he's doing so while shooting 51.5% from the floor, a career-best 42.4% from 3, and a career-best 90.4% from the free throw line. In other words, Towns is angling to join Larry Bird, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Dirk Nowitzki as the 6th player in NBA history to make the 50-40-90 cutoff while averaging at least 20 points. Number 18, Domantas Sabonis. Domantas Sabonis' numbers continue to shine after taking the cake with 28 points, 13 boards, 12 assists, and only 2 turnovers on 11 of 16 shooting in a 143-131 win over the Washington Wizards. On December 18th, the big man is averaging a scorching 19 points, 12.3 rebounds, and 7.2 assists. That's quite similar to what he posted last year, 19.1, 12.3, and 7.3, but he's now shooting 40.6% from downtown and getting to the charity stripe even more frequently. Number 17, Damian Lillard. The Milwaukee Bucks will click. Since the beginning of December, Dame is averaging 26.3 points, 7.7 assists, 4.7 boards, and a steal while shooting 46.3% from the floor, 44.3% from 3 on 8.7 threes a game, and 90% from the free throw line on 7.1 a game. Those are audacious numbers for someone who often shares the floor with the likes of Giannis Antetokounmpo. And speaking of that two-man partnership, the Bucks are now stomping opponents to the tune of an 8.5 net rating when the two superstars are on the floor. Since the beginning of December, that number has elevated to a staggering 19.7. Number 16, Jalen Brunson of the New York Knicks. The Phoenix Suns may still be having nightmares about Jalen Brunson. During a 139-122 victory over the New York Knicks on December 15th, Jalen Brunson waltzed into Footprint Center and torched the talent late in spurts for 50 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, and 5 steals. Somehow he did so while coughing the ball up just twice, making all 9 of his 3-point attempts and shooting 17 out of 23 from the field. Only Giannis Antetokounmpo twice and Zach LaVine have scored more points in the game this season. Just Keegan Murray, 12 of 15, and Bogdan Bogdanovic, 10 of 17, have had more triples in a single outing. Number 15, speaking of triples, Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry. The Blazers may not have defeated the Warriors on December 17th, but they did the unthinkable by snapping Steph Curry's streak of 268 straight games with a made three. Somehow, the two-time MVP had one of the worst scoring performances of his career, missing all 8 shots from beyond the arc, going just 2 of 12 from the floor, and submitting only 7 points. He still chipped in with 8 assists and helped the Dubs outscore the opposition by 14 when he was on the floor, but that was far from the main storyline. On the year, Curry has remained a ceaselessly positive player, averaging 28 points, 4.8 boards, and a career-worst 4.4 assists. He's knocking down 41.1% of his 11.7 three-point hoists a game. Number 14, De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings. Number 13, Kawhi Leonard of the LA Clippers. Quote, Kawhi Leonard just hasn't seemed quite like the peak version of Kawhi Leonard thus far, I wrote to kick off the Los Angeles Clippers star portion of the December 6 rankings. He's had to work harder for his looks. He's generated less separation off the bounce. The strength inherent in his game has felt more laborious. Well, since then, Kawhi has helped push the Clippers' winning streak to 8 games, and he's averaged 33 points, 5.3 boards, 3.3 assists. Crazy numbers. Number 12, Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks. Trae Young has been on quite the heater for the Atlanta Hawks, even as the team continues to land firmly in the realm of mediocrity. Over his last 10 games, Trae Young has averaged 31.1 points and 11.4 assists. He's been a bit too free with the ball and has not played anything better than semi-passable defense, hence the inability to carry his troops to more than a 3-7 record. I mean, we would win, but still. The Oklahoma product in Trae Young has put together 4 consecutive games with at least 30 points and 10 assists, and that's a feat that no one else has pulled off this season. In fact, only 9 players have ever done it. Tiny Archibald 5 times, Luka Doncic twice, James Harden 4 times, Michael Jordan and Damian Lillard twice, Oscar Robertson 8 times, and then as Jerry West, Russell Westbrook, and Young. Number 11, LeBron James of the LA Lakers. Seeing LeBron James outside the top 10 may feel funky, especially considering he and the Lakers made such positive headlines for their title-winning run through the inaugural in-season tournament. But LeBron's numbers, 25.2 points, 7.6 boards, 7.2 assists, and 3.3 turnovers, have largely trended in the wrong direction since last year, and the Lakers haven't exactly been a juggernaut. In fact, the team component holds him back most, considering he's between number 7 through 11 for all the individual RPR MVP components. The Lakers are 15-12 plus the win over the Indiana Pacers. That does not count toward the regular season stats or standings, but they've played a middle-of-the-pack schedule and only have a 0.33 point average margin of victory. That leads to a 0.12 SRS that's sandwiched between the Atlanta Hawks at 0.33 and Pacers at negative 0.09 for the number 18 score in the association. Number 10, Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. How are we doing on time? 35 minutes. Sweet. Jason Tatum needs to put together a few true showcase performances if he's going to climb closer to the top 5 of the individual rankings. He's been a consistent two-way force for a dominant Boston Celtics team, but everyone surpassing him, still true, but to a lesser extent with the number 8 finisher, has logged a significantly higher peak during this season. Tatum's true peak ranks 19th overall, coming on November 13th when he completed his first 10 games of the year with averages of 28.4 points, 8.9 boards, and 3.9 assists. Number 9, Kevin Durant of the Phoenix Suns. At what point does the world have to accept that Kevin Durant is an offensive deity? He's still on the cusp of slashing 50-40-90, checking in at 51.4, 47.1, 87, while averaging 30.6 points and 5.6 assists. At 35 years old, he's tracking supplanting 32-year-old Steph Curry as the oldest qualified scorer in NBA history to average north of 30 points. He's able to get to any spot on the floor that he wants to, essentially. Number 8, who would have thought? Tyrese Maxey of the Philadelphia 76ers. Tyrese Maxey has not fallen too far off the pace that he established while checking in at the identical spot in the first edition of these rankings. Since then, he's averaged 22 points, 7 assists, and 2.5 rebounds while continuing to suppress his turnover numbers, so that's good. Without question, Maxey benefits from spending so much time alongside Joel Embiid, no doubt. Number 7, Anthony Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers. A healthy version of Anthony Davis has been unleashed on the NBA, and the results are absolutely terrifying. The big man is thriving in every area, especially now that he stopped hoisting as many deep looks and is content to serve as a basket-attacking behemoth with great hands and soft shooting touch amid traffic. He's averaging 24.2 points, 12.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2.6 blocks, and 1.1 steals, only 2 turnovers while knocking down 54.9% of his field goal attempts. Number 6, who would have thought? Tyrese Haliburton of the Indiana Pacers. Tyrese Haliburton has fallen only one spot in the rankings since December 6th, but the drop-off has felt a bit more significant since he's gone from challenging for a top 4 spot and missing out by 0.289 RPR MVP points to trailing the 5 remaining players by at least 1.368. Essentially, Haliburton has fallen down a tier in the actual MVP conversation. Since December 6th, Haliburton has averaged 18 points, 12 assists, 4.2 rebounds, and 3.6 turnovers. Number 5, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. Luka Doncic is beginning to venture further into uncharted territory, though he sometimes struggles to bring the Dallas Mavericks with him. Last year, the Slovenian superstar joined Michael Jordan as the second qualified player in NBA history to average at least 30 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists. Jordan did so only once, putting up 32.5 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists for the Chicago Bulls in 1988-89. Number 4, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo's ranking hasn't changed, but his score has elevated from 14.898 to 16.14, leaving him on the cusp of challenging for top 3 placement in the future editions rather than sitting a tier beneath the true award contenders a few weeks earlier. Since December 6th, the Bucks' leading superstar has scored 37 points against the Pacers, 32 points, 12 boards, and 6 assists against the Bulls, exploded for a franchise record 64 points in a revenge game against the Pacers, and played highly impactful, efficient basketball in victories over the Pistons and Rockets. Number 3, my favorite player in the NBA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So much of the focus this season has rested on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's offensive potency. He's a hyper-efficient passer who has the length, ball-handling savviness, and lateral agility necessary to get to his spot at a moment's notice. And his ability to average 30.7 points and 6.4 assists without turning the ball over more than 2 times a contest serves as the driving force for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number 2, Joel Embiid. Based on the RPR MVP methodology, Joel Embiid's last 10 games have been more impressive than any 10-game stretch he produced during his MVP season last year. Three absences took place amid the stretch that dates back to November 21st, but the Sixers star has averaged 37.7 points, 12.6 rebounds, 5.7 assists, 2.4 blocks, and 1.3 steals while shooting 57.5% from the floor, 36.4% from three, and 89.5% from the free throw line. Those numbers are absolutely absurd. In fact, only 21 players in the history of the sport, again, based on the RPR MVP methodology, have submitted a superior 10-game stretch. No surprise that the Sixers have gone 8-2 in those 10 games. And number one, Nikola Jokic. Perhaps it's the grind of the NBA schedule. Maybe it's the lack of reliable bench contributors who can easily ease the nightly burden. It could be the absence and reintegration of Jamal Murray into the Nuggets lineup. But for whatever reason, Nikola Jokic has struggled more than usual in recent weeks, allowing the rest of the pack to close in, even as he retains his placement atop the league. Whether it's the inexplicable ejection against the Chicago Bulls, the combined 18-58 shooting against the Los Angeles Clippers and Houston Rockets, or the passivity on display while putting up just 8 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists in a blowout win over the Mavericks, the NBA's best player has looked more mortal than he has in quite some time. Of course, he still averaged 18.3 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 8.2 assists. So that is your NBA top 50. Let's see, what do we got now? Let us now switch gears to some NFL, shall we? Let's do it. Houston Texans quarterback CJ Stroud is in line to miss his second straight game. Stroud remains in concussion protocol and is likely to miss Sunday's game against the Cleveland Browns, according to ESPN. Quote, he should miss another game. Aaron Wilson of KPRC2 in Houston reported Monday that Stroud, quote, is making incremental progress in his recovery as he's still dealing with common symptoms, including a sensitivity to light. So Stroud seems to be pretty fucked up, so hopefully he recovers. He definitely needs to. With that, let's transition to some college football. The NCAA sent Michigan and head football coach Jim Harbaugh a notice of allegations regarding previous recruiting violations that are unrelated to the ongoing investigation into the program's sign-stealing scandal. According to The Athletic, the NCAA issued a level one violation against Harbaugh for, quote, allegedly providing false or misleading information in an investigation into recruiting infractions during the COVID-19 dead period. What's more, there were four level two charges included in the notice related to, quote, impermissible contact with recruits and analysts performing coaching duties. Those level two violations are considered less serious and Meekin, and it was noted that Michigan and the NCAA already addressed some of them through a negotiated resolution. Harbaugh was suspended for 3 games to start the season, although there was no resolution regarding the level one charge. That wasn't the only suspension for the head coach during this season, as he was also suspended by the Big Ten for the final 3 games of the regular season because of the ongoing sign-stealing investigation. Former staffer Connor Stallions resigned, and linebackers coach Chris Partridge was fired as part of the fallout of that scandal. As for the latest notice of allegations, Michigan has 90 days to formally respond. After that, there could be an infractions hearing in 2024 and eventual penalties for either Harbaugh or the program as a whole. The timeline suggests that this situation will be resolved before the NCAA's investigation into the sign stealing one, but not a fun time for Jim Harbaugh and the University of Michigan, I would assume. Switching gears back to baseball. The Seattle Mariners have spoken with the Cleveland Guardians about trading for first baseman Josh Naylor, per John Morosi of MLB Network. It was reported on December 8th that the Mariners, Chicago Cubs, and Pittsburgh Pirates showed interest in Naylor at the MLB's annual winter meetings, which took place in Nashville during the first week of December. Quote, the Guardians have 2 years of team control left on Naylor. For an offensively challenged club, it seems strange that they'd consider trading him, but as in the case of Bieber and Class A, it never hurts to listen. Naylor, who's 26 years old, had a .308 batting average, .842 OPS with 17 home runs and 97 RBIs this past season, so very, very good hitter. One of the most underrated players in the MLB. On the surface, trading Naylor doesn't make much sense right now. Cleveland finished 12th in the 15-team American League in OPS and dead last in home runs. Naylor led Cleveland in OPS and finished 2nd in homers. He was one of Cleveland's few bright spots in a disappointing season that saw them finish with a record of 76-86 and 11 games behind the Minnesota Twins for the American League Central crown. But if the Guardians are listening to teams about Naylor, then the Mariners should be knocking down their door. Naylor's batting average and OPS would have led the Mariners, who finished 11th and 9th in those categories last year, respectively. Seattle is also a contending team that made the 2022 playoffs but missed the playoffs last year. So let us now talk about some more NBA. And yeah, we got NBA, Thursday Night Football, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. The Philadelphia 76ers have been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference this season, but that does not mean they are not searching for upgrades before the February 8th trade deadline. The Sixers are monitoring the likes of Chicago Bulls veteran Zach LaVine and Toronto Raptors star OG Anunoby, according to The Athletic. The Sixers are third in the Eastern Conference with a 19-8 record, and I guess they feel like they need someone that, you know, can bolster their team so that they can compete against the likes of competition. Thursday Night Football, baby. During the 2023 offseason, the Los Angeles Rams felt like a team that would go as far as aging veterans Matthew Stafford, Aaron Donald, and Cooper Kupp could carry them. After beating the New Orleans Saints 30-22 on Thursday night, it's clear that the Rams are much, much more. Strong contributions from young players like Puka Nacua and Kyren Williams have helped make LA a legitimate threat in the NFC. Stafford, Donald, and Kupp, all three sidelined by injuries at the end of last season, have been huge. Stafford specifically has looked like a different quarterback after entering last season with elbow issues. Quote, so it's kind of nice that I'll be able to go out there and have a much more normal offseason experience and be able to be out there and do what I love to do, Stafford said in April per ESPN. The 35-year-old has looked more like the quarterback who helped lead the Rams to a Super Bowl championship in 2021. Rookie guard Steve Avila has helped solidify an offensive line that was in shambles last season, which has certainly helped Stafford after being sacked 29 times in 9 games in 2022. He's been sacked only 26 times in 14 games this year. Since returning to the field in Week 5, Kupp has again been one of the league's most uncoverable receivers. Puka Nacua, who now has 1,327 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns as a rookie, has been unbelievable. Kyren Williams has become a force as a dual threat back, and he's shown that he can wear down opposing defenses that focus too heavily on the passing game. He rushed for 104 yards and a touchdown on Thursday, and in doing so, went over the 1,000-yard mark in his 11th game of the season. Sean McVay is still an innovative playmaker who can make guys like DeMarcus Robinson dangerous by scheming them into space. The Rams are balanced and dangerous offensively, as evidenced by the 30 points they just dropped on the New Orleans Saints, who have a great defense, ranked number 6. So huge win for the Rams. They now are the 6th seed in the playoffs, so absolutely huge. And speaking of absolutely huge, that's probably the reason why you clicked on it, why you're listening to this episode. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is a Los Angeles Dodger. Japanese superstar Yoshinobu Yamamoto is going to start his MLB career with the Los Angeles Dodgers on a 12-year, $325 million contract, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. He beat Gerrit Cole's deal by $1 million. Furthermore, the Dodgers will pay an additional $50.6 million in posting fee to the Onyx Buffaloes. So the total outlay is 12 years and $375 million. So the Dodgers made him the highest paid pitcher in MLB history, despite the fact that he has not thrown a single pitch in a single MLB game. The New York Mets reportedly offered Yamamoto the $325 million contract first, but the Dodgers matched the deal, according to The Athletic. The New York Yankees reportedly bid $300 million, but did not go above that. Yamamoto has been pitching professionally in the NPB League with the Oryx Buffalo since 2017. The right-hander is one of the most dominant pitchers in the world, regardless of the league. During his time with the Buffaloes, Yamamoto has been an All-Star 5 times. He's won the Pacific League ERA title, pitching Triple Crown, and Pacific League MVP in 3 consecutive years from 2021 to 2023. Yamamoto had a breakout moment on the world stage pitching for Japan in the 2020 Olympics. He allowed 2 runs and 2 walks with 18 strikeouts in 11.1 innings over 2 starts to help the host country win the gold medal. The 2023 World Baseball Classic was another standout event for Yamamoto, as the right-hander had a 2.45 ERA and 12 strikeouts in 7.1 innings over 2 appearances. Yamamoto carried that success into the 2023 season with the Buffaloes, as he led the league in 9 different pitching categories, good lord, including ERA, whip, strike. So his stats were as follows. He had a 7 WAR, a 1.21 ERA, 169 strikeouts, 16 wins, a 198 batting average against, 0.88 whip, 1.74 FIP, 0.1 home runs per nine. I mean, Jesus Christ. And a 22.2 strikeout to walk percentage. The scouting reports for Yamamoto are just as glowing as that stat line indicates. CBS Sports ranked him as the best international prospect after the WBC, saying, quote, Yamamoto would fit right in from a pitch quality perspective. He has great command of a mid-90s fastball with carry, as well as a swing and miss splitter and a high spin curveball. He would have to prove that his stuff, especially his splitter, plays the same with the baseball stateside. But again, there's enough precedent here to be optimistic about his chances. Yamamoto is on the smaller side of a starting pitcher, with his listed height as just under 5'9 on the official NPB website, but the movement of his fastball and his ability to change eye levels with his off-speed stuff gives him a greater margin of error than most pitchers at that size. Coming off another disappointing playoff performance, the Dodgers had a lot more questions going into this offseason than they have in a long time. Hitting was not one of the questions they had, but no one is going to complain about the addition of Shohei Ohtani. The two-time American League MVP also got to work quickly for his new team by joining Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman in the Dodgers' presentation to Yamamoto. The state of their pitching staff was the biggest question for the front office to figure out. Clayton Kershaw was very good during the season, but his fastball velocity was way down late in the year, and he got lit up for 6 runs in only 1/3 of an inning in a Game 1 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks in the NLDS. Kershaw has been playing on 1-year contracts each of the past 2 seasons. There's been speculation about his future, either away from the Dodgers or potentially retirement. His announcement that he had shoulder surgery on November 3rd and he hopes to return midway through the 2024 season only adds to the uncertainty of him not playing again. Julio Urias is a free agent and his future in the league is uncertain after he was arrested in September on suspicion of domestic battery. Prosecutors declined to charge Urias in the case as long as he commits no acts of violence against anyone for 1 year and completes a 52-week domestic violence counseling program, per the Los Angeles Times. He remains under investigation by the MLB and subject to discipline under the domestic violence policy. Dustin May will be out until at least mid-season after undergoing elbow surgery in July. Walker Buehler will be making his return after missing all of 2023, rehabbing from Tommy John surgery, and we still have Bobby Miller. It is so great to be a Dodger fan, so great to be an LA sports fan. Between the Dodgers and the Rams, the Lakers, the Kings, it is amazing. This was episode number 427. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you guys, and I'm out. Peace.